We get into the segment called, yes, Parliamentary Tunes. And our Parliamentary Tunes are where we join our very own Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell us, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning, Ahmad?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, a little bit chilly, but I think it's all well.
And tell me how it feels being back from Dublin. You know, are you missing that lovely weather of Dublin? Or you're missing that, you know, that soup kitchen that you watched every morning? Tell us what you miss of Dublin, Ahmad.
Well, let me say this. Dublin has got quite a large Muslim presence anyway. And I had the opportunity of meeting a Palestinian who owns a chain of restaurants there. And he's one of them that opened the first Palestinian embassy in Dublin. And yeah, we've had further engagement. We've had dinner together and things of that nature. He will be visiting South Africa, inshallah, soon. He's 25 years now from Palestine that he has made home in Dublin in Ireland. He has been to Zimbabwe recently, and, you know, he's amazed. He says, you know, Zimbabwe is such a beautiful country, and if only they can get their house in order. He actually wants to go and invest in Zimbabwe. And many a times, if you remember, you know, many of them, particularly experts, have been raising this issue of Zimbabwe and the opportunities and what Zimbabwe can become if only these politicians get their house in order. But the infighting continues, so it's not helping the cause in any case. But I can tell you they've never heard anything as far as load shedding while I was in Dublin. I must be honest about that. More importantly, beautiful weather until I got here and it was freezing. But otherwise, Dublin's a beautiful place. They have their challenges. You know, I've had a session with the chief whips of the parliament there, and I raised serious concerns about the housing crisis. You know, despite people being employed, a very, very low unemployment rate of now 3.5%, you know, and 3.5%. But despite that, people are earning well. And beside earning well, they are still in dire straits when it comes to people are still going hungry there. There's no housing. Let me tell you, do you know what is the rental for a one-bedroom apartment? You're going to be shocked if I tell you. Nothing less than about 44,000 rand, South African money, for a one-bedroom apartment.
Amazing indeed, Ahmad. That's quite a sizable amount of money. And whilst you're talking, I'm watching the screen, that Boniface is pointing at this question. It's from Asif. He says, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh, welcome back to South Africa. I want to know from you, when will South Africa declare the South African youth unemployment a national disaster? That's a good question there from Asif, Ahmad.
You know, brother, but let me tell you. South Africa does not need to have such a high unemployment rate. They don't need to have such a high unemployment rate. But I can say that I have started the process of just myself. I said, let me lead by example of training South Africans to become barbers in South Africa and to join the beauty care industry. And, you know, we are at a very advanced stage at this point to try and empower people to create jobs. But I just had the opportunity now in speaking to one of my nephews who produces shoes. And he supplies all these shoe industry shops, Pep stores, Ackermans, all these stores. And he said to me that, you know, the problems that they face, and this is where the Competition Commission must come in. And I've raised this time and time again with Minister Patel, but very little or nothing is done about it. More importantly, have you ever heard those that, you know, like the EFF in this particular case, and they talk about how they care about workers, right? The rights of workers. Have you ever found them going into any Chinese shop or Chinese business? No, not at all. Now, Chinese, over and above everything that's been imported into South Africa, are manufacturing locally, employing foreign nationals, paying them 60 rand a day, which is what I raised again and again. Where is the labor inspectors that are supposed to be going there all the time? And they do go there. Of course, they leave with brown envelopes in any event with handshake. And they do nothing about it. But isn't it a coincidence that the EFF, who says that they fight for the rights of the working class, have not said a single thing, despite me raising it in parliament so many times, of how the Chinese are exploiting us. Now, let me tell you what I've just found out. That these guys, just to show government that they are compliant, they're ordering from local manufacturers. But I can tell you, they order 5% from local manufacturers. And that too, they take the blood out of the bone. That's the term I should use. They bring it to a rock bottom price and they buy 5% of the goods. And the rest of it, they bring it from China. Now, when the rand was affected with the dollar recently, then they wanted to buy more goods. They came to the local manufacturers. Okay. So you can see how exploited the situation is. Now, all government officials that talk again and again about buy local, why are they not taking an interest in making sure we manufacture local, sell local to buy local? They're not doing it. Why? Let's ask ourselves why. Do you think the EFF will ever do that if they're not benefiting? Do you think the ANC will keep quiet if they're not benefiting? These people are benefiting because they get funded by these institutions and organizations. That is the reason why we're having this problem of high unemployment rate in South Africa.
You know, Ahmad, perhaps people ask you the question, is it true that the unemployment rate amongst the youth, is it 46.5%, is it 50%, or is it 60%? What are the true figures, Ahmad?
Well, I can tell you now, the statistics that we get on all unemployment is inaccurate. We've always questioned statistics South Africa when they appear before us in different portfolios on the accuracy of the statistics, even on the crime. Be that as it may, the issue of the youth unemployment, I will agree that the high unemployment rate will be very high, because let me give you a good example, Brother Heaven. If 60% of the youth that you pay to go and study in the TVET colleges drop out before 1 year, it means they are all on the street, unemployed. Then you have those that had school leaving certificates, okay, that are who've never gone to study at all, also there. Then you got that 30% of those that did mathematics that also failed, and they're also there. So what you are doing, you are actually creating a havoc on the ground by this large, your population is increasing coincidentally by over 1 million a year alone. If you saw last year, you know, the number of children, 91,000 children gave birth to children. All of them going to be part of the statistics at some stage. Now, you need to create, government's job is not to create jobs, Brother Shafi. No. They must create a conducive environment for the private sector to create jobs. Government is not going to be able to sustain employing and employing and employing. That's the problem they don't seem to understand. But more importantly, you must employ people that are fit for purpose. And that's something we're not doing. So that's another problem that we tend to have. So I can tell you the unemployment rate in South Africa is high. It's extremely high. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot worse than we think it is. There is no one can give you an accurate assessment of what the situation is, not only on employment. I asked them to give me, you know, you're paying social grants. How many of those children are in school? If you remember, during the days of apartheid, every year you had to produce your attendance register, your performance, your report, and everything. Nothing of that sort. So who says these children are all at school? If all these children are at school, what is all these children doing in the street corners and they're not there? They can't be in school. So very little or nothing. In fact, I think we are in a lawless society, a lawless government. We're not in control of anything. And I honestly believe we can create jobs. A good example is we keep complaining about Russia, Ukraine. We've got some of the most fertile land in the world. But we are saying we are affected by the wheat prices because we can't get wheat. Why must you go and import wheat when you got beautiful land with all the natural resources to grow your wheat? And the wheat that you are growing, who do you think owns it? These big companies like Sasco, Pioneer Foods and things, they go and buy these things, Brother Shaman. Before it's even planted, they buy the entire crop and they got it insured too in case there's a drought or whatever it is. So they own it. So you can see how the monopoly capital system that was in control pre-1994 continued to own, which is that the 10% is the one that owns. So nothing is changing. And I really believe Government should sit down with big business. We've got a high unemployment rate. Let's sit down. Let's look at the skills we need. How can we do that? How can we accommodate them in the different sectors? There's so many things you can manufacturing. South Africa. It doesn't. That's the problem we're sitting with. So there's no need for us to have such an unemployment rate.
Yeah, absolutely. You're making a lot of sense there. But then we also think about a government that's not thinking deeply enough.
Anything to take investment to the local, nothing. Are you there?
Yes, Ahmad, we've been breaking out now and then, but alhamdulillah, maybe you were you went under a bridge or so. But, you're making a lot of sense. And the point I want to add here is that we have a government that's passing on perhaps an environmental debt burden to the future generation. They're borrowing money left, right, and center, and they are looting and they're doing this and that. But, the future generation that comes in here, and another government that takes in place, but they will still have to pay the debts. And then you get the IMF trying to warn this country. It sends South Africa a warning. I mean, what type of warning? You're putting this country, the mindset is to put every country into debt so you can just come and capture. What's your thoughts on the ANC government being very reckless and not thinking about the future of the youth or the future generation of this country, Ahmad?
Brother Chapat, I just wish we have a lot of legal experts amongst the Ummah alone. And I wish that they will come together and work with us to be able to hold government accountable. I really wish they will do that, because at the end of the day, even their survival depends on good governance principles, which we're not applying at the moment. Now, here it is the president who's a law above everybody else. He can just go and decide, I'm going to borrow 151 billion somebody is giving him. Who's going to pay? The taxpayers must pay. It's not like he's going to pay it. Now, why must you borrow 151 billion when South Africa loses an estimated 400 billion rand a year in South Africa, only on goods and services, because items that cost 10 rand, you're paying 100 rand or 1,000 rand for. And government is aware, every single politician is aware of the amount of money we lose, but they will all do nothing about it, because whoever governs, wherever they govern, they all benefit from this corruption and looting. And I've given an example before. I've asked a question to the Minister of Finance. Can you, on a monthly basis, ensure that every local government, let's start there, I said, we'll come to the others. They must advertise and report on all the tenders awarded, the value of it, the itemized billing, who are the owners of this company, the directors of those, everything. Okay? I said, do that. He comes back and he says to me in the session, no, we do have that process in place. So then I called his bluff. I knew that he doesn't know what he's talking about, and he's the Minister of Finance. So I wrote to him and I said, can you provide me the information on that, and that municipality for the last 2 or 3 years? He writes back to me and tell me exactly what I was expecting. That no, none of these people are reporting. They are supposed to do that. Maybe we need to make it mandatory. Now, the minister of COCTA, she said to me, I saw your question, Honorable Imam. You are right. And Minister of Finance is wrong. You don't need to make it mandatory. It's a requirement. They must all report. But he's doing nothing about it. Why? Because they govern most of the municipalities in any case, and they all are enjoying them. That is why they will do nothing about it. Because if they do what I'm asking them to do, I can tell you South Africa won't need money. Can you imagine what you can do with 400 billion? That is why you created 17,500 black millionaires and multimillionaires in the last couple of years. What have they put back into the country? Nothing.
No, absolutely, Ahmad. As you said, what have they put back into the country? And what has the ANC put back into the country besides, oozing, making it ooze, money oozing out, infrastructure going through, state-owned enterprises are becoming non-existent. Now they are Pravin Gordhan say, now we're getting rid of the criminal elements in ESCOM. I mean, what is all this, Ahmad? I mean, and then they may call it derater. Because if it wasn't for derater, we wouldn't even know about the hooligans that were running all these cartels that were, or the mafias that were running Eskom, Ahmed?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of respect for Minister Godan. And to some extent, I defended him on the basis that I haven't seen any evidence implicating him one way or the other. But of late, I've become very suspicious. I am repeatedly asking him the same question and he's refusing to answer the same question. Why did you take, or why did anybody like Coleman Andrews take the entire freehold fleet of South African Airways planes and sell it to himself and then released it back to SAA? What was the value of the sale? Who gave him authority to do that? Wasn't it a conflict of interest for him to come back and lease it to himself? We want to know. And every time I'm raising it, he avoids it. And then we had a quick chat just after the session the other day. And he said, no, you are right. We need to address that. But he doesn't say anything. Now I've written a question to him. I've got a lot of replies, but that reply from him hasn't come. Now it makes me very suspicious that he doesn't want to tell South Africans who are the rightful owners of these things, what went wrong and what is going on and who's benefiting. It's exactly the same thing with the current situation in SAA. They're selling it to somebody. And I asked him the question, is there anybody, any politician linked directly or indirectly part of the sale? His answer is not that I'm aware of. No direct answer. So what does it tell you? There's a lot more. So while on the one end, you want to clean up, but you're continuing with the corruption. Cleaning up means you must come clean and tell us what is going on. But no, you are avoiding a lot of stuff. They just don't want to tell us. So we're having a serious problem as far as that goes. And I think the only other way is if we can get legal experts to work together with us in the interests of this country. So we hold government to the hostage and go and make demands through a con to a high court application or the con court or whatever it is to be able to get these people to account and tell us what is going on, because we represent the people on the ground. Politicians cannot hide away from that. They must tell us exactly. We have a right to know.
Yes, Ahmed, if you're looking at the ANC, they got a stupendous problem, a big problem indeed. This is what Fikile Mbalula is telling us. He said that Ace Magashule is launching his own party. And recently, when the ANC went to give their shirts out in that area where Magashule is quite popular, in Free State, the ANC, the T-shirts were being burnt because these were Magashule supporters. So will Ace Magashule make a big dent in the the voter population of the ANC? What's your thoughts on that, Ahmed?
Brother, the question that one needs to ask is this. Let's take the president of this country. What is he supposed to do? Is he supposed to fight corruption to the extent that he's going to have to forget about the fact that it's going to upset a few people and who may decide to go and launch their own political parties? And this is what I've noticed, particularly of Black Party politics. If they don't like it, they will go and open the next party next door, and they're going to continuously do that. Even if they can't read and write and they're not fit for purpose, that's what they're going to do. Now, we already know that the ANC, there's a plan for the ANC to contest against the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, and I thought Free State was going to be one of them in Gauteng. But now, with Ace Magashule launching his own party, and I'm told he recruited 4,000 members in one weekend or something of that nature, it means they are all going for, control and power, which simply means you're going to divide the votes of the ANC, and that will be the beginning of the end of the ANC, if that's what's going to happen. Because you can't tell me that Ace is going to come, and if he got a couple of seats, and if the ANC needs it, he's going to work with them. He's going to work with the others. Already the EFF is saying they want to bring him there to them. You understand? With all these coalition governments failing and collapsing overnight, can you imagine what the future holds for South Africa come 2024? Unless we make decisions that is going to impact positively and deal with all these corrupt people and politicians, if you're not going to do that, I want to tell you, we're going to be in serious trouble come 2024. Because look at all the possibilities, an ANC-EFF government. Can you imagine an ANC and an EFF and what demands the EFF is going to make? Now, EFF is wanting to take a lot of people away, like Ace Magashule, and he's taken Jimmy Mani and whatever it is. And he will want to work with the Zuma clan. He's not going to want to work with the Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, what are they going to do? Can you imagine, you know, how volatile the situation is going to be? There'll be no delivery of services. You won't pass no budgets. You'll do nothing. And that is why I say our people need to rise. Take ownership of our country. We cannot continue like this anymore. Really, we can't. It's now or never. Do or die situation in South Africa. The country, I can tell you, come 2024, if we don't act decisively right now, we are going to be in very serious trouble. Very, very serious. And the ANC is not going to be able to solve the problems. The problem for the ANC is far too big. Now, I had a discussion this week when I was in Dublin with certain ANC members and some very influential people. Even the president, I'm told, is very upset. Why is he upset? Because the prosecuting or national prosecuting authority is not acting on the Zondo Commission. He's done everything, he's approved it, you know, but they don't want to act. And he's not, you know, he's very upset about it because he says nothing is being done. So while he wants to do something about it, others are not. But now they're bringing in the issue of Palapala. Yes, indeed. Palapala is a question that we need to ask. We need answers for it. You understand? But don't at the same time bring the country to a standstill and destroy the entire country.
Yeah, I'm
talking about who benefited when and how and destroyed. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, you know, I want to move on. And, you know, there is this perception that the middle class of South Africa is in serious trouble. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, when you go to the shopping malls and you watch how people are buying so frugally and, you know, basic commodities and they're taking it in the small quantities and so forth. Your thoughts on the middle class, are they in really serious trouble in this country, Ahmad?
Very much so. They are the targets. Remember, a very small percentage of people pay taxes in this country. 15% is the maximum of people who pay taxes to look after the 85% of the country. And you want to take the blood out of the bone and want more and more and more from them. But look at the number of foreign nationals. If you saw the Chinese building was burning, they were throwing bags of cash from the top. No accountability. Now, the middle class have to bear the brunt of what is going on. Now, these middle class are the people that would have gone and borrowed, would have went and taken bonds, would have bought motor vehicles and paying for them every month. You understand? How are they going to survive? If you look at the way the bond rate has gone up in the last couple of months, you know, people on the ground, the middle class particularly, I can tell you, a lot of them are going to run into trouble financially. A lot of them. And let me also say this to you. You see, when you don't pay your debt, we must not think that if you don't pay your debt because you're in serious trouble, the banks and everybody is losing. No, they make more money if you don't pay. Think about the entire process from the time they sell you something, finance it and repossess it and sell it again, and how they get these people to come and hound you and everything. You will find that if there's anybody benefiting, it goes back in this vicious cycle to the very people who funded it initially. That's the problem you're sitting with. So let me tell you, bad debts pays for the big financial institutions. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmad. And then maybe, you know, we also look at, you know, some South Africans are at the risk of a double tax. And it seems that, like, you know, this government is hell-bent. As you said, only 15% of the people are paying tax in this country at the expense of 85%. And yeah, as you said, the country is captured by so many people coming in illegally and so forth. But here we have, some individuals, working hard for the money, but paying double taxes. And what's wrong with this government? You know, just want to tax people to death, Ahmad?
You know, all I am saying, Brother Shabbat, I love my brothers and sisters from all my neighboring countries, wherever they come. I believe they are all equal. They're all human, and we must all treat them with love and respect. And, you know, they are like a visitors in your country. And you know what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, through our Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, has always said, how you visit us. Okay? But the point is also this, that you've got to level the playing field, Brother Shabbat. You have to level the playing field. You cannot have a case situation where a large percentage of people, I give you a good example, the Israelis, South Africans who send money to Israel. There's no accountability mechanisms in place. And there's no oversight at all. There's no requirements. You can send as much as you want to Israel. And that's one of the things I'm asking them to deal with right now. Now, how is it, and apparently this was done a long, long time ago. Okay? Now, how is it they can send as much as they want, but nobody else can do that? Now, just like that, I want to tell you, all I am saying is that if you are conducting a business and a South African is conducting a business, right, you only get what's meant for you. But you can't take away what is somebody else's by not complying and paying. Because I'm going to give you a good example, and that's what my nephew just said to me just now. You know the regulations that they must comply with the labor unions, the bargaining councils, and everybody that come there. They have to comply and pay those minimum wages and things. Otherwise, they're in trouble. But nobody is going and visiting all these foreign shops. It's not fair. It's not fair, even if it means that there must be something that they must pay. You understand? Because you live here. You have you're making an impact on the health sector, on the education sector, in housing, in everything. It impacts. And it affects the local people in any event. And I'm not saying, and I must agree with you, coincidentally, that the foreign brothers and sisters work very hard for what they earn. And I don't think our locals are willing to do that. Foreigners start their shops at 4 o'clock in the morning and finish 12 o'clock at night every day. They sleep in their shops and everything. Our people are not willing to do that. On a Friday night, said you'll find our people in the parties, partying all night. That's what it is all about. So it's not like there's no opportunities. The opportunities are there. Why did the foreigners leave their mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, children, home, everything, and come to South Africa to cut hay or to put a spaza shop in a township? They saw an opportunity, right? Why did they see an opportunity? They saw an opportunity because the locals are not taking advantage of it. And if you remember, the locals did have years ago, and they're non-existent. The very same local, and now people are going there and they came, they saw, they came for economic gain. They've got equal problems there, but they saw an opportunity and they're willing to work for it. Why don't our people also be willing to work for it? Compete with them. That's what competition is about. They're not willing to do that. So if we can level the playing field, I think you can actually bring the taxes down. You can actually bring the tax rate down if you level the playing field and make sure everybody that's supposed to pay is compliant. And don't focus on the small percentage, because like I said before, the best way to explain it and express it, you are taking out the blood out of the bone. That's what it simply means. And those people are disgruntled and they are leaving the country in droves. The skills are going away. I've just come to a wedding. Both the husband and wife just got married, are planning to go away, okay, to go and teach in Dubai and things. People are leaving. The skills are going. Why do people want to leave? You think it's easy for somebody to leave your family, job, everything and go away? They don't have an option. There's no future. They are worried. They're going for better opportunities.
Yes, Ahmad, very eloquent indeed. Unfortunately, time has caught us. Perhaps your parting words this morning, Ahmad?
Well, I think, we need to tighten our belts. Let us not sit back and relax and think everything is going to get sorted out on its own. Nothing, I want to repeat, nothing will get sorted out unless we rise and become part and parcel of the solution. I tell you, Brother Shah, if we're not going to do that, we are going to pay very dearly in this country for the future, particularly the generations come. Forget about how much money we got and properties we got and everything. The wrong people get involved and take it. They will find a way to come and take everything that you have worked hard for. So nothing is guaranteed and protected. So be careful. I plead with our brothers and sisters. You have the skills. You've got the highest level of integrity. You've got morals. You've got values. You've got the way of life. Come together. Let's come together and save South Africa for our future generation. Many of us will not be here, maybe 10, 15, 20 years. We don't know. But what are we leaving to our children? Listen, you can leave a few million rand. What is a few million rand going to be worth to your children when they are after everything you got? So we need to be very careful. So my plea is, let's come together and work together and find solutions. Let's identify the people that's got the necessary skills, the intellect, the integrity, that are committed and passionate about serving the interests of our people. Let's come together and let's take South Africa forward.
Beautiful message indeed, Ahmad. I'd like to thank you for that. I know you're going to be flying out shortly. I mean, you have a pleasant trip, and Allah take you safely. And once again, you know, whilst on your journey, you took this call, and I bless you for your commitment to our Muslim media. Allah keep you now. And as I've said, bon voyage. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.